It's Two Dimension, the comic book podcast with no direction. And today we have comic book talk, listener mail, and Polapalooza. And now, here's Al!
You know, my mom's gonna freak out when she hears you screaming. She's gonna go, "What is he? What did something happen?" But no, nothing happened, and we're here, and this is our show, and and my sidekick Don here, you know. And you need to stop drinking all those drinks, Don. You know, I don't want you tipsy on the show either. You know, yeah, the Tonight Show's on, repeats are on every night. I watch them like occasionally. They're really cool because and they're really sad because you watch the show. The sad part is you watch the show sometimes, you go, everybody's dead.
Oh.
You know, Johnny, Ed, the guests. And every once in a while you get like one time I watched it recently, they had George Carlin and Richard Pryor on the same panel with Johnny, like three of the great comedians of all time. You're like, wow, this is like unparalleled in humanity. But yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, I always watch the show, but towards the end, even in the 80s, it started getting kind of, it was okay, but in the 60s and 70s, it was second to none.
Yeah,
it
but you know
funny.
What? If you watch it, the repeats, you'll notice something that I didn't notice until I watched the repeats. In the 70s shows, they're like, I mean, he comes out and he does his thing, but the banter and the stuff is kind of more laid back a little bit. They'd get like, you know, the people would talk, and it was more conversational, whereas, like, in the 80s, it was almost like they amped it up a little bit. I don't know if it's because the 80s were cocaine-fueled or whatever. I don't know. But it just seemed like everybody came out, and they were all, you know, everybody was energized. But if you watch the 70s shows, because they were an hour and a half, too, it just seemed like what we do is more conversational and more like, you know, sometimes people would go on the show, famous people, and not even plug anything. You know, they just went there because they were buddies of him, and they went to talk. And
well, the world kind of changed. You know what I mean? No, but I mean that we always bring this up, and that's just, listen, if you and I were doing this show in the 20s, you know, on a Victrola, we'd be saying the same thing. Well, the world changed. It always changes. When I was growing up as a kid, I'd hear something, I'd tell my mom, because, honey, they used to say that when I was your age. It's, you know, but it's always going to change, as it should. It'd be a stagnant world if it didn't. You know, when I was a kid, I always watched The Little Rascals. I'd go down to Texas and see them on Dallas, Texas. They didn't show them in Oklahoma. And I come back and I tell people, and I remember every person I talked to my parents' age always said the same thing. Do you know all those kids are all grown up and some of them are dead?
Oh, man, no, what a bummer.
It never made a difference to me. I mean, you can still watch the shows. They're still the same thing. I mean,
I just get sad.
Well,
you know, oh, I miss Suzanne Plachette, or, oh, I miss, you know.
Life is uncertain. Death is not. You know, I mean, it's just, you know.
Well, yeah, but now, did you hear that there's some doctor, they're going to try a human head transplant. And they also said that they're going to unfreeze, and if it works out right, they're going to unfreeze a bunch of cryogenically frozen heads, and they're going to try to. So, you know, we'll see where the brave new world leads us. You know, it's almost be now, you know, all these years we were waiting for, where's the flying cars of existence? Where's this? Where's that? It seems like they're getting ready to throw all this crap at us now, you know, and we're like, oh, really? Now? Okay, I don't think it's a good time, but, you know, okay.
You know, one of my students, he's going for pre-med. But when he first was getting ready, he was getting ready to graduate high school, and he was getting ready to go to college. And he asked me, I took him for lunch one day, and he said, "Mr. Moore, do you want to live forever?" And I said, what do you mean? Well, you know, never die. He says, "You mean if I could keep the same health I have now and the same clarity?" Yeah. And I thought about it for a minute, and I said, well, it says, you know, I co-run a karate school with about 10 to 20 students. I co-host a podcast with about 10 listeners. How can I not live forever?
It's true.
So, you know, I mean, honestly, I understand the appeal of immortality in a way, but every time I ever read a story about people that are immortal, it's just like they just, they get bored and, I don't know, there's
no
challenge.
Yeah, it would suck if you're immortal and all of your friends and family are dead, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's
like, you know.
There was a Conan comic book Roy Thomas wrote and John Buscema drew, and at one point, Conan finds this woman at the end of the story, and she looked like a typical John Buscema fairy princess. She was some type of queen. And then she was telling a story that she was ancient and had immortality. And then she was explaining about, at one point, her playmate she grew up with. It was a picture of her looking like, you know, a John Buscema queen, princess, with these three old hags sitting around her. That was her playmates. I thought, God, that would be horrifying. Just one panel, and it just horrified me. And then she's talking about, you know, they vanished, and she's still alive, looks the same. I'm thinking, there was that Greek tragedy, you know, the mythology of there's some guy that a goddess fell in love with. So she asked Zeus, I don't know if it was Zeus, she asked one of the gods to bestow eternal life on him, immortality. So she did. He got it. But they didn't change. He lives forever, but he grew old and feeble, and, you know, he was in great pain and wanted to die. His body was crumbling and getting older by the minute. But they couldn't refuse it because you can't refuse a gift from the god and they can't take it back. I'm like, God, that's a way to go.
Yeah, oh, that's anyway. It's like a Twilight Zone episode.
Boy, that really turned bad, didn't
it? Yeah,
really. We were talking about jetpacks and stuff.
You're really depressing me. I'm like, I don't want to do the show now anymore. I just want to go and stick my head in there.
Well, I'm sorry about that.
God, yeah.
You know, there's a couple of things. One thing I wanted to bring up, we got, hang on.
What did we get?
In reply to last week's episode, I got another letter from Mark Chure. Thank you very much.
Reader mail.
Yeah, listener mail.
And, listener mail, yeah, not reader mail.
Anyway, he has some thoughts about what we started the show off last time about comments made, or according to this, idiotic comments made by Marvel's VP of Sales. So I'll just read what he said. I personally have left Marvel Comics behind. There's simply nothing there left for me. It's not due to the increased number of diverse characters they are trying to promote, but the sidelining of the characters they are emulating and the length of these stories. Example, Thor was deemed unworthy and was no longer the god of thunder. Jane Foster takes up the hammer and Thor, Odin's son, becomes a vagrant. It's an interesting idea, but it's been 3 years, and Thor is still not the god of thunder. If I can gladly read about a frog being Thor, which was awesome. It says, I would bite on Jane Foster being Thor. But the frog story lasted 3 or 4 issues, not an eternity. Same thing with Steve Rogers. They made him an old man and Sam Wilson becomes his Cap. Okay, interesting idea. But it lasted almost 1.5 years before Steve came back. But he came back as an agent of Hydra. Tony Stark as Iron Man, same thing. Riri Williams as Iron Woman is a cool idea. Dr. Doom being Iron Man seems sketchy, but I'll bite. I didn't know Dr. Doom was Iron Man.
I didn't either.
But
didn't he become the Silver Surfer one time, Dr. Doom?
Well, that was he got Silver Surfer. That was that comic that you love so much.
Yeah.
That was in the 60s. But that, again, to back Mark Chure, that was one issue.
Yeah.
You know, they solved it and took care of it, and it brought you into the comic fold. But if it would have lasted years, you probably wouldn't have cared anymore. Tony Stark as Iron Man? Oh, no, I already read that. Creating new characters shouldn't mean having to replace your core characters. And again, these stories would be cool if they lasted 4 to 6 months. But how do you hook a new reader or maintain a long-term reader when you write a 12 to 36 issue story arc because it makes a good trade paperback? Don't even get me started on events. You and Rook both. If you look at these characters as brands or IPs, it makes even less sense. If a version of your core characters are bringing in $1 billion a film plus merchandising, why would you ever do a book with a character's name on it, but have it about something other than what you see on screen? You know, it's funny when I'm reading it was a well thought out, well written. And when I replied to Mark, you know, mine went, yes, I agree. Rook feels that way too. And that was about it. I mean, that was really thought out, but I couldn't help. when I read all the things he's saying about these characters, I kept thinking about Sergio Ganez Destroys DC comic book. I don't know if you ever read that, Al.
Mm-mm, never saw it before.
When
I remember what's his name? Fred Hembeck destroy Marvel Universe.
Yeah, Fred Hembeck did it in the '80s. But Sergio Ganez, when they stopped doing Gru in the '90s, as soon as they stopped doing Gru, they started, him and Mark Evanier put out the Destroys DC, and at the same time, they put out Sergio Ganez Massacres Marvel. They both came out at the same time. One was DC and one was Marvel.
I never saw these.
But these were fun. The DC is the one I want to talk about, because in it, it has all the DC superheroes, and there's some instigator causing the trouble. And they're and finally, at the very end of the story, I find out it was Johnny DC. You remember him?
Yeah.
Johnny DC, when I was a kid, and this is in 71, a friend of mine in fourth grade, his mother bought him books. He was a really educated kid. But they had his coffee pot box full of comic books, and they were all, you know, stuff from the 60s when we were really small. And when I'd stay the night, she let us go in the box and get some of the comics, and he and I would read them. And to me, even though it was just, you know, 5-6 years earlier, to us it was a lifetime, because it was the 60s. This is when DC had all the checks on top of their titles. And they had an ad, and it was Superman with, you know, Wonder Woman, Batman, all the DC characters all around him. And Lois says, "Superman, who's that?" And he's got this character on his shoulder. It was the DC emblem at the time. And on top of it was a little kid's head with a clapboard like you're graduating. And he said, "Well, this is Johnny DC." And it says, "He's going to be the mascot. As you'll see him in all the books promoting our books and selling our books." And I thought, that's kind of stupid. But at the same time, I kind of liked it. Well, at the end of this story, they find out.
Is that just a one shot?
Yeah, both of these were just one shots. But the person who's doing it, the instigator, was Johnny DC.
I remember.
And this is him now. But he looked like the grizzled heroes of the 90s. You know, the Punisher, all the Image guys, you know, the Watchmen thing that was brought on. But, you know, he had 5 o'clock shadow, he had a grimace, and I think he even had a cigar. And my favorite line of that book was Wonder Woman said, "You used to sell our books with pride." And then he started going on about, you know, back then I was proud to sell these books, but you guys had just gone far beyond the pale. And as soon as he said that, all of them just looked dumbfounded, and they started talking, and Superman said, "Yeah, that's right, I died." And the Batman said, "Yeah, that's right, I broke my back and had to send all my minions after the guy that I gave the title to," and he started killing people. And then Aquaman was saying how he lost his hand and lost his kid. You know, it went down. I thought, yeah, all those things actually did happen in comics. But when they're saying in the Sergio Ganez book, it just sounded far beyond horrifying. So when I'm reading Mark's email, that's the first thing I thought was this book. I'm sorry the comics have taken such a dark path.
Well, yeah, man. Look, I'm honest. I feel bad now. Physically feel ill now. You know, it's like you've been reading too many, I don't know, Frank Miller, Alan Moore comics. Very depressing.
Well,
you know, can we uplift this conversation
a little uplift
bit?
It. But I think in that case, part of it, I always think, you always bring up, they need to make up more characters, new characters.
Yeah.
But it seems to me all they're trying to do is keep trademarks going. They're just trying to, when I say that, they're bringing in other people to have the mantle of the old characters. And I always hear on different podcasts when they have a writer or any kind of creator, every time they start to create something, Marvel or DC says, "Look, we got a whole backlog of characters. This is just use one of these. You don't need to make a new one up." But one, they're trying to keep those things going. I think also they're trying to avoid lawsuits of creators' rights. That's why you start seeing some of these old characters coming back that people have forgotten about. You're just trying to recycle what they took from other people and don't have to pay.
My friend and I were talking about that, and he goes, if I had all the money in the world and I could buy Marvel and DC, what I would do is I would buy the companies, I would stop publishing the characters, new stories, and just reprint all the old stories and reprint them all. Just leave them alone. You screwed them up enough. Just reprint the old stories from the 60s and 70s, and I'm like, okay, whatever you want.
Well, that's in that Marvel Comics, the Untold Story, that's what they talked about. Stan Lee gathered such a backlog of inventory stories, and, you know, times were tight and everything, and Martin Goodman said, why are we paying all these guys if we have all these stories? So he stopped, and all they did was just reprint inventory stories.
For a few years, yeah.
And until Jack Kirby showed up, and then that's when the whole Marvel Comics thing blew up. But I don't know. I've seen other places try to be reprint houses, and that's fine. I would actually like that, but I don't know. I think you have to have new material, you know, as well. But, you know, I was saying, making them new characters, there's all kinds of comics out there now. I mean, they're not making them up. They're making them up to own. They're not making them up for the big mainstream publishers, you know.
Yeah, that's true too.
So,
man, I'm depressed now. I'm like, wow, all the energy is like sapped out. I'm like, oh man.
All right, okay.
Well, I hope this one's more more fun.
Yeah, this is fun. Way back one time, we went to Yancey Street, as we always go through the dollar boxes. I bought a book and I just read it this week, and I can't tell you how much fun it was. Monster Menace.
Oh, yeah.
This one, it's not one from the 70s. I think that was from the 90s. It was.
Yeah, I got this. And Kyle Baker cover, where he's imitating the Jack Kirby, pointing at the monster and screaming at the, you know, the girls like doing that, you know. Oh,
I love that. Yeah, and he's got one of the Steve Ditko Jack Kirby monsters. It's got four stories in it. These monster stories that they did for Atlas, I do know that Jack Kirby did a bunch, and Steve Ditko did a bunch.
The Terror of Tim Bumba.
I know, and I was so thrilled, because I told you I had that in Where Monsters Dwell or something in, like, 74. And that's all. I always thought Jack Kirby drew it. It's a Steve Ditko story. And, that book was just a blast. You know, I used to... They always had, like, four or five of those monster books in the 70s that they just reprinted the old material. And, like I said, the stories... There's four of them in a thin 22-page comic, so they weren't really much, but, God, they were fun, you know.
Yeah.
The stories, they put effort into them, but in some ways they're a little bit sparse because, you know, sometimes the background's a little bit lacking, or, you know, they're not as in-depth as what we're used to. One time Jack Kirby was talking in the 80s in Amazing Heroes during an interview, and they asked how he got the title King of Comics. And it was Victor Fox. He said when he worked at, you know, for Victor Fox, he said Victor Fox would be walking up and down, you know, the floor among all the drawing boards that all these guys are working on. He just kept saying, I'm the king of comics. I'm the king of comics. Work faster, you know.
King Victor Fox would do that?
Yeah.
A jerk.
But he kept saying, work faster. And Jack Kirby, he laughed, and then they were talking about, asked how many books he did, these guys are required to do, and it was just unbelievable. But then he said, well, but it was different. He said, sometimes you could get away with just doing a panel with a simple airplane in it with a caption, meanwhile, and that's it. And he said, you didn't have to fully render the whole thing, you know, you just put that out. But he said, at the same time, even though that's all we were doing, we still put all of our best effort into it. And so when I'm reading these stories, it's exactly what he said. Some of that, they do have panels like that are simple. But I was never disappointed. It's not like, oh, he just phoned this in. They still put the effort into it. I mean, they still drew out the plane, you know, even though sometimes I guess it could be shorthand. But yeah, it was great fun.
Did you, well, you know about this. Since we use the Tonight's Show intro, the whole thing about Jack Kirby and Johnny Carson.
Yeah, we've talked about this on the show before.
Yeah, it bears repeating. Johnny Carson one night came on and said, somebody named Jack Kirby seems to be calling himself the King of Comics. Well, you know, there's a lot of guys out there that think they're like, you know, the King of Comics that nobody's ever heard of. And I don't remember exactly what talk he gave, but he basically was a put down. And then, like, I don't know if it was Mark Evanier or somebody wrote back later and explained to Johnny that Jack Kirby is actually a comic book artist that helped create the Marvel Universe, and Carson actually apologized on air. So that was always an interesting, you know, little side. But I'm sure that bit is on YouTube. If I can find it, I'll link it.
I have it,
it
on the
me.
Blog. I'll put it on this
Yeah, I'll link
too.
It. Yeah, so yeah, that was kind of a weird, you know.
Yeah, what that was about, it was a comic store I went to in Oklahoma. They had that Jack Kirby 3D. It was some type of 3D comic book that came with the glasses. And the guy
Captain 3D.
Oh, was it Captain 3D?
Pretty sure. Yeah, I mean, I bought it. It was a reprint book. I think it was called Captain 3D.
That was, well, Marvel owned that one. It wasn't a Marvel book.
No, it was an independent book.
Yeah, I think it was Battle or something.
Anyway.
But the store I went to, he had a handwritten sign above it that was what they're talking about at Tonight Show. And I was in there, and for some reason there was a female customer there that we were asking what it was. And he said, no, I was on a Tonight Show. And I said, they're so show business oriented on that show. He says, when it said King of Comics, they thought of comics as comedians.
Yeah, sure.
And so they were bagging on why haven't we ever heard of him. And he said somebody wrote into it. Yeah, I didn't know at the time it was Mark Evanier.
I'm assuming. I'm not
I
sure.
I think it was Mark Evanier because he worked in show business.
I'm assuming.
He was a writer for all the sitcoms and stuff.
I can check.
But then they did apologize. And then somebody asked us, why didn't they ever have Jack Kirby on a Tonight Show? But the 3D glasses, they had all these Jack Kirby, you know, it was decorated with Jack Kirby monsters and stuff. And, you know, looking, I've never bought that book. And sometimes in the past, I was thinking, I wish I would have bought it. And then I see it again. Ray Zone did all the 3D looking to it.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm looking it up right now. That's why I'm thinking that I had it. And let me go. Well, Ray Zone did a lot of those 3D. He was Mr. 3D back in the 90s or whatever. You know what? I don't like 3D comics at all.
They're a novelty thing. I like
them.
They're
annoying, especially if you have glasses like me. You know, they're not.
My mom bought me one in 1966. It was Batman, which, again, I was, like all of us, we were Batman fanatics. And I remember the glasses were neat because on the bridge of your nose, it was the Batman logo was the glasses. You know, the Batman head was on the bridge of your nose. And it had the red and green lenses. But, I don't know, when I'm reading it, it was irritating me because you'd have to wear the glasses to look. And, I don't know, it's neat at first, but then the novelty wears off quick.
Do you remember in the 80s when they were bringing 3D back and they had like 7-Eleven? Give yourself 7-Eleven glasses, you can watch Gorilla at Large.
Well, it was Creature of the Black Lagoon, and the next Saturday it was Gorilla at Large, yeah. God, I just got out of college then, and my mom said, we got your glasses, don't worry.
Oh,
and
really?
The four of us, there was four sets of glasses on the TV. And I love Creature of the Black Lagoon. That was a thrill to see. And so we all watched in our living room in 3D, and it was a blast. And then we're all well excited about Gorilla at Large, but that one came on, and I think that lasted 5-10 minutes, and we lost interest.
I remember seeing this one that is a really weird movie. It's called The Mask. It's a Canadian horror movie, and it was a 3D, and it was only 3D, I think, in certain parts. But like when the 3D scenes would come, it would the whatever, this giant head or somebody would go, put the mask on now, put the mask on now, and you put your 3D glasses, and you'd see like the. It's kind of a creepy movie, actually. You know, if somebody out there wants to check it out, I'm sure it's on. See, I'm thinking it was this, wasn't it? Wasn't it a reprint of this?
No, that's the Harvey comic. No.
I seem to remember a reprint of that in
just
the 80s.
Just type in Jack Kirby Tonight Show.
Okay, I will.
But that's, again, I'll have it on the blog. I got all that stuff on an old episode.
Okay. Yeah, and then they had, do you remember a movie that they in the 80s, they did a 3D movie called... it was a Western called Coming At You. Did you ever see that?
No.
Yeah. It was some Euro movie, but it was made in 3D. They tried to bring 3D back. I don't know if that was the catalyst for all this other stuff or what it was called, Coming At You. And, you know, I guess it was a minor B movie hit or something like that.
Like I said, 3D is fun, but to me, after a while, it just kind of wanes. The Tor, Joe Kubert's Tor, I'm told, is the first 3D comic. And again, Ray Zone was the one that put that together.
I can't find it. I just see Jack Kirby Tonight Show, and I see an image of Johnny Carson.
That was his monologue.
I'll save this because there's like they did his image, yeah. And they put the apology on it or whatever. Well, whatever it is, we'll look it up and we'll figure it out. But you're probably right. It was some other book.
I've got the book on an old episode. So, but no, in the 80s, it was kind of making a comeback a little bit. The Pacific Comics did Alien Worlds, and they had an Alien Worlds 3D. It had a Dave Stevens story in it. And see what else. Oh, they also it was after Pacific went under, and there was Blackthorn Publishing, and they republished an issue of Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, with this fantastic Dave Stevens cover, and they were in 3D.
That was done in 3D.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And there was some others. There was several of them. Like I said, 3D comics kind of came out, but again, it's neat, but it's just a novelty. You know, I don't really enjoy reading comics in 3D.
See, here's this one. It's not this one, is it?
I think that might be it. Yeah. I think that's it.
I seem to remember having a blue cover. Anyway, you said you got it.
Yeah.
We'll post it.
I think that one's it.
It says Inside 3D poster by Jack Kirby or whatever. Yeah, I seem to remember this comic book, but whatever. We'll figure it out. Yeah, 3D's a gimmick, you know, I mean, obviously, but it rears its head, and well, I mean, in theaters,
yeah,
like 3D's making a comeback. You can go see movies in 3D if you want to.
Have you seen one
like
in 3D?
Avatar? No, I haven't been to a movie theater in 10 years.
I've seen two of them. My daughter and I, when she was in high school, we went to see Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. You know, it's one of those computer animated shows.
Oh, yeah.
It was fun. We went to see it, and it was 3D. And it's kind of neat. It's good if it's not 3D. They show it on Cartoon Network. It doesn't rely on it. But whenever watching it, it was kind of fun. But after a while, I got tired of it, and I'd take the glasses off, you know, and then you can't really make out what it is because, you know, it's just this mess.
Yeah.
And then I went to see Avatar. When Avatar came out, everybody kept talking. Again, Britt went to see it, and he said that it's one of those movies that's like when Stanley Kubrick's 2001 kind of changed movie making, you know, the way people approached it. He said that's what this is. He said it's not the best movie he's ever seen, but it's just how he did it. And so we, you know, as well as shows, most people went to see. I got to go see Avatar. So we went to see it. It was neat. And when they go in that other Roger Dean-looking world, it's something. But, you know, I never wanted to buy it on DVD. It wasn't, you know, it was immersive. And that was neat. But again, a lot of times, John Carter. My wife and I had to go Sunday at noon to see John Carter, because all the showings were in 3D.
Oh, no kidding.
And I didn't want to see it in 3D. And they were trying to force you to see it in 3D. Well, when you go pay 3D, you have to pay more money. And then you get glasses wrapped in plastic, and then they have a bin outside that says, "Try, you know, don't waste, recycle." I'm like, and I had to pay for these things. So when my wife and I went to see John Carter, I brought the glasses from, you know, the other movies. Not John Carter. When I went to see Avatar, he goes, "Oh, sir, we're not charging you for the glasses. We're charging you for the projection." So fine. So I've got four sets of 3D glasses at home that aren't doing me any good, but I paid through the nose for them. And but the theaters paid all that money for the 3D projection, thinking it was going to be the next big thing, and it's not.
Yeah, they're still trying.
Yeah, well, they were forcing you to see them in 3D. All the showings are 3D. And I wouldn't go. That's why, like I said, I went Sunday at noon to see John Carter, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But saying that, a lot of people I know, they try to go see it in 3D and IMAX, and that's fine. But I don't know, 3D after a while, it's kind of neat, but a little bit goes a long way for me, and I get tired of it. It kind of takes away from the movie, in my opinion.
Understand.
So, anyway.
What's next?
Well,
what's next on our agenda, on our journey through comic book?
All right, well, I feel bad I'm flying through all these. Well, actually, I'm not. I just got a Marvel comic. I talked about it before. It was the last issue of Hellcat, which is fun. But the reason I bring it in, check out this ad. And read it for the...
Bryson, yeah.
Read the theme.
He pushed us forward, yeah.
I like that. It's a full-page ad with screened-in drawing of Bernie Wrightson with a headshot. And this is Bernie Wrightson, and he pushed us forward. That's all you need to say. I think it's nice. I know DC, I read that they were going to put something about Bernie Wrightson in all their books. But Marvel did it as well, it looks like. And I take my hat off to it. Cause
yeah, he did better work for DC. But,
well, he was a DC guy. They got
he was a Warren guy. Well, and a DC guy.
I know him as a DC guy, but yeah, he was one of everything. I think it's Spider-Man's hooky is what they got.
Yeah, it sure is. Sure is. Yeah, that's nice. I mean, yeah, he deserves it.
I agree. So anyway, well, I guess we talked with no direction for quite a while, so let's have a music break.
Yeah. To a Dimension can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.
And we're back. And that was Matthew Sweet with the song Millennium Blues from the album In Reverse. I think that was released around 2000, 2001. So.
Why are you playing Matthew Sweet?
Oh, I enjoy his music a lot. And plus, I think somebody mentioned somebody called Matthew Good, one of our esteemed listeners.
Oh, yeah, Mark Chere, who sent us the really nice message, mentioned.
So Matthew Good led me to Matthew Sweet. There you go.
Mark Chere, he said he liked the music breaks, which was Dallas's idea. We started the show, and I'm thinking, I don't know about this, but I found I enjoyed them. Matthew Sweet used to do a spot on Cartoon Network.
I didn't know that.
When my daughter was small, you know, she always watched Cartoon Network, and they had, they'd have different recording artists, like Apples and Stereo.
I remember Apples and Stereo, yeah.
And what was that other band? Holly had a Powerpuff Girls CD and a Dexter's Lab CD, and they had some of these bands.
Yeah, independent bands.
Yeah, and they would come
alternative
in,
bands.
But they would do spots, you know, and they had Matthew Sweet, who I didn't know who he was. And he was just talking about Scooby-Doo, and he liked Scooby-Doo. And in between we talked, they'd show clips of Scooby and Shaggy and all the stuff they did. And he'd talk, and then it had underneath, it said Matthew Sweet. And then he said, yeah, I always liked him. And then all of a sudden you hear him singing Scooby-Dooby-Doo, Where Are You, at the beginning.
I remember, yeah.
And then it clicked, and okay. And I think they had Juliana Hatfield, who
probably.
I liked quite well.
Probably, yeah.
But, you know, anybody did a cartoon song, they had them, but they were the contemporary hot artists of the early 90s.
Yeah, I have a cassette somewhere where there was a show called something about Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah.
And like XTC has a song in there and a few other.
That was a computer game.
It was a TV show too.
Yeah, it started as a computer game and they made a really good TV show out of it on PBS.
Was it PBS? Okay, yeah. So, yeah, I have that one. But yeah, I remember. And there was a CD called Saturday Morning, and it had like all the Ramones doing the Spider-Man, and all these other bands doing the cartoon themes for classic.
Yeah, they had the Speed Racer theme by I can't remember the name of that band. God, that's so awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
We're finishing this episode with that Speed Racer song by I can't think of it. I'll have it on the blog.
I don't know who it was.
Yeah, a friend of mine had that CD. It was a Rhino.
Yeah, it was
a Rhino, and it was all set. Collector Soul did the Bugaloos. Juliana Hatfield did Josie and the Pussycats. I don't think Matthew Sweet was on that one. I remember one of the drawings I don't think it was on the cover, but it was on the interior, was this kind of mutant zombie sitting in front of the TV eating cereal. And I thought, yeah, that was every one of us in the 60s and 70s, just glued in front of TV and cereal watching cartoons.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes, in the early 90s, there was still some good music around, and, you know, whatever.
Rhino was putting out a lot of neat stuff. I mean...
Rhino is now called Shout Factory.
Oh, yeah, they put out neat stuff. I got some DVD sets of 60s TV shows, and they put out movies. I didn't know that was them.
The guys that started Rhino, I think, sold it or left, and they became Shout Factory. So Shout Factory, uh-huh. I don't think, does video. I don't think they do audio.
Well, yeah, Rhino, there was a record store in Los Angeles, I'm told. I've seen pictures of it. You know, there was also Amoeba Music, which is really famous out of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But Rhino was a big one, and I guess they had a store, but they put out, I don't know, my friend... We were always working, and everybody's listening to portable CD players all night, all day. And what she was doing was going to pawn shops, because that was back when CDs were top dollar. And she would come in with stacks, like MTV Buzz, and that's where I found Why Zombie, More Human Than a Human, which is one of the most awesome songs I ever heard. And she had, what was it? Saturday morning cartoon thing. She also had remember those Scholastic Rock they used to show on ABC in between the commercials? She had a CD of all those stuff. You know, it was fun. It wasn't just regular bands, which I like, but it was some of these, I hate to call them novelty discs because I really enjoyed them, but they were kind of clever and fun, you know.
Yeah, oh, no, I remember all that stuff. Oh, God, I'm trying to think of there was another one of those. I can't remember what it was right now. I think they might have even been a Saturday morning, too. It was like a big deal. But that stuff is probably out of print now. You know, there's probably, you can't only find it in used places. But you probably find it on Amazon, I'm
sure.
That's
one of those things, you could probably find it somewhere for cheap. But if you're really looking for it and you go online, yeah, they probably want top dollar for
it. You never know. You never know. There's something here that I was like looking for, and I can't. And now it's like my mind. I shouldn't talk to the microphone with my back to it, but there's something. Oh, anyway, whatever. Yeah. Well, you brought a bag full of comic books that just blew my mind.
You know why? Because it's time for.
Palooza.
All right, it's that time. I did a little bit different. Usually Al and I both have a collection of stuff, but I found a bag of books that I kind of want to talk about. So Al, grab one.
Yeah, you found, like, this is amazing. Okay, but I'll just grab one off the top of the list here. I actually peeked through some of them and I was like shocked, but okay. You picked this up for $1 somewhere. Someplace. First one, Justice League of America number 55 by Mike Sikowski and inked by Sid Green and story by Gardner Fox. I remember this comic book when I was a kid. I remember seeing this cover when I was a kid, and it always like freaked me out because it was like, why is Robin so fat?
Well, you know what? You always call him the fat Batman on this. When I was growing up, Dick Dolan was the artist on Justice League of America.
Yeah.
And those comics fascinated me because they had two Supermans, you know, two Robins, and two Hawkmans. You know, it was Earth 1 and Earth 2. I'm guessing our Earth was Earth 1, and the Golden Age Earth was Earth 2, which actually didn't make sense to me. And they always had the two Flashes, the Barry Allen Flash and the original Jay Garrick Flash. The Hal Jordan Green Lantern and Alan Scott Golden Age Green Lantern. As a kid, a friend of mine had one of those books and it fascinated me. But there wasn't a second Batman. They said he was semi-retired. And so Robin took the mantle. But what I always found bizarre, he stayed Robin. But his costume was Batman's costume with a modified emblem in the front with bat wings and an R over it. He had a yellow Batman cape with the scallops at the end. And he didn't have a cowl. He just had a little bat-looking mask. But the issue is, when Al calls him a fat Batman, he's got a six-pack rib cage, but the head's too small
for
the body.
Yeah, the head's too small. That's what it is. And the cape looks too small, too. It's like he's like an overgrown, you know, Robin, because he's got the Robin symbol on his...
But he has the rest of the costume is Batman's. I don't know. I was always fascinated when I see this comic book on the wall of shops. Oh, that's where it started. Because that's where they introduced him. The Justice League of America with a grown-up Robin. When?
1966, I think this was.
Yeah, well, I think it says when right here, right?
Oh, when. Yeah. Well, a grown-up Robin when, yeah. I thought you said when. I was like, oh, yeah, 1966.
Yeah, it was from 1966. Mike Sikowski, we always talked about him.
Or 67, actually.
Oh, was it 67? Mike Sikowski is an artist that I, as a kid, always enjoyed. But Sid Green really makes him look good. You know,
yeah.
I've seen Mike Sikowski inked by other people, not quite so much.
I like Giordano inking him.
Yeah, I did. Well, I like Jake Diodorno if he inked anybody. One of the first issues of this, again, is a Dick Dillon issue, was the Dick Grayson Robin was in it along with this Robin. And he was, they were fighting Solomon Grundy. And Dick Grayson's, you know, short pant costume got torn up, and the other Robin said, look, I've got a spare costume. It was designed by a friend of mine called Neil Adams. And it had a long sleeve red shirt, green pants, and the cape kind of turned into wings like a flying squirrel. And I remember Dick Grayson said, okay, let's go show him how two Robins fly. I thought, man, that's kind of neat. Well, later on, that ended up being the Earth 2 Robin's costume. He got rid of the...
So that's Earth 2 Robin.
Yeah.
Okay.
And some of those characters in that, I knew Wonder Woman, but they have Hourman. The Justice League I knew is at the very end of this book. I was glancing through it. With some of those characters, I don't know. There's one kind of, I don't know what she is. It was a girl, but she looked kind of...
Her? The girl with the, is that Zatanna with the top hat or no? Well, doesn't it have in the front roll call or something?
It might, but I'm talking about when you're, Robin's with, he's with a bunch of characters I've never seen. One's a female, and she looks kind of like a...
Her, right there, right?
Yeah.
She doesn't get a name.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like there's Johnny Thunder, Iron Man, Wonder Woman, Wildcat, Hawkman.
You know, Johnny Thunder was a character I really liked. Johnny Thunder was a golden age. I used to read him in these reprint books DC put out, but he was a golden age character. He was just a blonde guy with a check blazer. Nothing special about him. But it was a pink electrical being, like he was a genie or something. Some kind of spirit with an attitude. And when Johnny Thunder needed him, he would just yell, "Hey, you." And the guy would show up. And like I said, he was a snide, kind of wisecracking pink genie thing. And then Johnny Thunder could just tell him what to do, but it wasn't like a slave master type, even though it was. But as a kid reading those, you know, I guess 20, 30 years past its, you know, publication date, I always enjoyed those characters. Johnny Thunder was one of the original Justice Society members.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, I'm trying to find this woman's name, but I can't find it in here.
I apologize. I just got these books, and I haven't had a chance to read them.
Okay, it says here's a panel here. On all planet Earth, four people stuck at random turn into superheroes for some unknown reason, and this is only the beginning. For in the days that follow, how choose loots... As he will, Claire Morton becomes gem grabber to her heart's delight. So, Claire Morton becomes gem grabber to her.
That's again. There's so many characters. It's what we talked about earlier when the company said don't make up a new character. Use one of the old ones.
Yeah.
So that could be one that comes up and people think it's new, and then you find out that she ran in '67.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Interesting.
There's so many, but I don't know. To me, these things are just a blast to read through. All right, let's grab another one.
All right, here's Flash number 164 from same year, probably. 66, actually.
Yeah, well, it's close enough.
Infantino and Murphy and Joe Giella, who will be at Heroes Convention this year.
Oh, you see, now see, he's another one of those DC inkers that I liked. He always inked Carmine Infantino a lot. And I love Carmine Infantino this time. This is my favorite time of him. Was, you know, when he did Flash in the 60s, to me he was second to none. He had a style. As we talked about before, you said he went back to art school, you said, at one point, and came back.
In the 50s.
Yeah, he had more of a...
modern look.
Yeah, an advertising kind of look in a way.
Sort
it was
of,
really
yeah.
slick. And but Joe Giella was a great. He always inked.
He inked a lot of Batman. He inked a lot of the Sheldon Moldoff pretending to be Bob Kane Batman. But yeah, I remember seeing those as a kid at the stores. Like those early Flash with those bizarro superheroes that they had.
Now I'm surprised at this Flash issue because this looks a little different than some of the reprints I've read. It looked nice, but first I wasn't sure if this is Infantino or not. Yeah, I love Flash. Okay, well, Al's already looking at another one.
Yeah, this one, okay. I used to have this, I don't know where it went. It says Showcase presents the Spectre. I don't know if this is when he came back.
That's what it says. Read that red caption at the top.
The most exciting comic book event of the past 20 years. I guess this is when he came back or something like that, but it's by Murphy Anderson and Gardner Fox. Another one that I remember seeing when I was a kid. But around this time, I was buying Marvels. So the DCs were interesting to me, but I was never really like, you know, like, I was never really like, oh my God, I gotta have this book, you know, whatever. And I was just like, oh, that's cool, but I think I like Jack Kirby better.
It's... The Spectre was somebody fascinating. He was created by Joe Siegel, the guy that created Superman.
Was he?
Yeah, he was. When Joe Siegel, the writer, and Joe Shuster, the artist, created Superman, you know, when they were trying to wrest the rights from DC, and they were fighting about, well, not wresting rights, they were trying to get, you know.
Is he one of the ones that they were fighting over?
No. But he was trying to, they created Funny Man, which I guess was a crime-fighting clown, and which didn't do it. But later, Joe Shuster created the Spectre. I can't remember the artist. I can't remember the
Jerry Robinson?
No.
Bernard Bailey.
Yeah, Bernard Bailey. How did you know that? Well, walking encyclopedia,
well,
ladies
I don't
and gentlemen.
Know about that. That was, it just, they just, yeah.
Because I kept wanting to say Bob Bowling. I know that.
No.
Yeah, Bernard Bailey, another BB guy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but the Spectre didn't do well. You know, he was a creature of vengeance. You know, I hate to take a sidebar on this. There was an article I saw. I think it was I'll find it posted. I think it was 13th Dimension, a really good blog that I've posted on our blog before. But they wrote something that's unique to the comics industry is vengeance characters, and you know the Spectre was one of them. Ghost Rider, Rook's favorite character, is one of them, and they just went down the whole Deadman, you know, that Neil Adams character, but a bunch of vengeance characters that had to come back to stop whatever it was. And it just went down the list, and yeah, it's true. There's like, you know, 16, 17 of them. I never particularly cared for vengeance characters, as I say that, but I love the Spectre. But reading reprints of the old Spectre, Golden Age stories, I liked the character. It kind of fascinated me, but I didn't really care for the stories, and they didn't really do so well. And then, like I said, in the 60s, they tried to bring you back.
Well, Michael Fleischer, you know.
Oh, that's when it... I'd read the old ones. They fascinated me. The ones... The book he talked about, the 100-page Super Spectacular, the world's greatest superheroes. Neil Adams on the cover, he drew the Spectre along with Superman and everybody else. And I see in some of those books the Spectre. But then it's when they put him in Adventure Comics. Michael Fleischer wrote those stories, and Jim Aparo drew them. Those right there, that's where, to me, that's the Spectre. Those were the greatest stories I think I ever read.
Oh, yeah. Those flipped out a lot of people when those books came out.
But he was, again, those stories, he was a creature of vengeance, even though I said I didn't care for those. Before, I think they were trying to make him a superhero, and it didn't quite work so much. He was, again, one of the original Justice Society of America members. If you ever see, I'll have to post it. The first issue of Justice Society, it's kind of funny because they're all sitting around a table and they're having dinner, and there's this spearmint looking, you know, ghost creature sitting at the table with them.
I didn't realize that was like his when they brought him back. Wow.
Because I've seen online the showcase, and they had Hourman and.
Yeah.
Hourman, I think the Spectre was another one. But they were trying to bring back their Golden Age characters to a younger audience.
Yeah, right.
And like I said, when the early 70s rolled around, that's when I saw them.
Let me grab another one here. A different one. Oh. Okay. This is Lois Lane number... These are all from the same time, so whoever had these were buying them in the 60s... 66 and 67. Lois Lane number 71 with Bad Luck for a Black Super Cat. I think Catwoman's in this too.
Yeah, and it's Kurt Schaffenberger.
Kurt Schaffenberger,
who
yeah.
I think we can both say is one of our favorites.
Yeah, I love his work. Yeah.
I do too. No.
Kind of corny, but I love it.
It, you know, it is. And one thing, and it's one of those love-hate things, he always drew women's hair with that role. Some, you know, he had the 50s, the first lady, Mrs. Eisenhower, she always had hair like that. Well, that's why they drew Lois Lane.
And she had the pillbox hat. Like,
yeah, the pillbox hat and the
like
tailored look dress that Jackie Kennedy wore.
Jackie Kennedy, yeah.
But Lois Lane changed when Mork Weisner took over the books, and she became this really busybody. He must have hated women. But, you know, the Lois Lane of the Golden Age, she was tough. She was kind of glamorous. She was interesting. She was a good reporter. And she was fantastic. But as it went on, she was just kind of like this biddy. Even though she was a young woman, she seemed like an old biddy.
Yeah, because like from 67, she already looks like she was from the 50s or something, you know?
Well, you know, they had to, but I don't know, as a kid, she always kind of grossed me out. Saying that, I loved Kurt Scaffenberger. I used to get reprint stories where DC used to put those super spectaculars, and they were 35 cents, and it had like five stories. And it was Lois Lane, which again was a book I wouldn't touch as a kid, but I got that one because it had five pictures on the cover of all the stories inside. And one of them was this space creature, and he was this big kind of monster with bug eyes in a cute way. And he had a lamppost turned into a circle, and the light made it look like a pearl, like it was the gem of a wedding ring. And he was handing it to Lois. Well, in the story, that's what it was. He saw a young couple, and the guy proposed to a woman with a diamond ring. So the monster did the same thing. I got it. I loved them. Lois Lane irritated me to no end.
Yeah, I would never buy them because it was like, it almost felt like a girl's comic or something.
Yeah, well, it's Wonder Woman, Supergirl. I had some, but it's because people gave me a stack. I don't want these more. You want it.
Exactly, yeah.
But I read them. But Lois Lane, like I said, Kurt Scaffenberger, I love the Superman. The stories are always kind of the same. She's trying to prove that Clark can't Superman, or she's trying to get Superman to marry her. And nevertheless, I saw these. That was kind of fun. But she still irritates me.
All right, this next one that I pulled out is one that's been reprinted before, but this is a classic. This is one of the giant size DC Giants More Secret Origins issue number 8. Now this is like, oh, this is from 65. Okay, this one's got the origin of the Justice League, the Atom, how Aquaman got his powers, origin of Flash, story of Superman's life. Oh, this is a classic book. If you saw the cover, you'd know it. This is like, I'm sure there's Aquaman here. I'm assuming this is Ramona Freyden. I'm sure it is.
Yeah, I think so. I glanced through that one.
Gil Kane.
I love Secret Origins. They did it later. This was an earlier book, but I used to read them. They rebooted it, but it was still the same thing. It was just nothing. I think it even had the same logo. But the first issue was, it had Wonder Woman in it. Wonder Woman, there's Wildcat. You always saw that in your place.
Yeah, there's one with the Challenge of the Unknown, too, on the cover.
But this, it has the origin of the Justice League. It has, but it's just reprint stories. But, God, I just loved it, because you found out why some of these characters, I never knew how they became what they are. What's this one? Oh, the Atom. I thought it was Cave Carson for a minute. Gil Kane and Murphy Anderson. Gardner Fox. A lot of these were written by Gardner Fox, and he brought back some of these characters. Yeah, this is Ramona Freyden. Gardner Fox was a science fiction writer that I think Julia Swartz brought in. And Julia Swartz and Gardner Fox is the one that, you know, brought the Flash back as the Barry Allen.
Yeah, Silver Age, yeah.
And then they brought Green Lantern back as Hal Jordan. And Gardner Fox gave everything a science fiction tilt to it. So they took the... They took DC's Golden Age characters, but when they basically started. They did
the Silver Age. Yeah,
Julius Swartz and Gardner Fox started the Silver Age.
The Flash.
And then later Green Lantern, and then Marvel came out. Yeah, this I always love these. Nice. This is the thick one too.
Oh yeah, it's 100 pages. I'm sure.
80 page.
80 page giants.
Okay. See, here's something to talk about. I was so into those 100 page, special editions. They were 50 cents. My friend had these old ones, and he said, well, this is an 80-page giant for a quarter. And I thought, yeah, that's right. It's like, I just get 20 more pages, and I have to pay another quarter for it. But, you know, as time went on, these were greatness. But now, 20 pages for $3.99.
All right, here's one from the 70s, right? Late 70s. Army at War... Featuring Sergeant Rock number 272 with fantastic John Severin artwork. It looks like John Severin inking It looks like, you know what? It looks like John Severin inking Russ Heath.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't look like just regular John Severin. It has a neat look to it. It's really
cool. It's Severin inking Russ Heath, which I've never seen before, which is really nice.
What year was that?
78, maybe? 74.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, because it's 20 cents, so it couldn't have been 78.
74. Yeah, I've never seen the two, that combination. It works.
Yeah, but that one, it's, I've never seen John Severin ever do second-rate work, ever.
Oh, no.
It's always, when you got John Severin, you got everything. He never slipped.
Yeah, that's wild. I've never seen that art combination before. I guess that must have been like, that's almost like too good. It's almost like, wait a minute, let's just let Russ Heath ink his own stuff, and we'll get John Severin to do another story. I mean, the backup is by Rick Estrada. It's fine, but, you know, it's like, that's almost like too great of an art team there. Too much goodness.
I have to say, I like the Rick Estrada book story at the back.
It's not bad.
I haven't read it. I just glanced through it, but I like the look of it. He was somebody that I liked and sometimes didn't really care for.
Yeah, it was hit and miss.
This one, he looks more like Alex Toth. Make War No More.
All right, here's another interesting one. I remember seeing these when I was a kid. These old, All American Men of War from 66. And it was just another one of their war comics, but usually they had oddball characters in them. And this one's got a really nice Kubert balloon buster. Real nice Kubert stuff on here. With a backup by, looks like, boy, I know who the artist is and I can't, oh, wait a minute, he's got a signature here, or does he? I can't figure out who it is. Anyway, these are kind of cool little war books. They're different ones, you know what I mean? They're not Sergeant Rocks. They're just kind of like, I forgot, I think there was a group of, called the Hellcats or something.
Yeah, I never read it, but I
had one of those when I was a kid. Something Sergeant Something's Hellcats or something. Those were in some of those books, I believe.
Yeah, because somebody gave me a World's Finest book, and it was Superman. It had the Superman and Batman Revenge Squad. It had a Neil Adams cover. I remember reading through it. It was an old book, but it had the Hellcats. I'm like, oh my God, what are these? I was shocked that they had the word Hell in a title, and the cover had like a commander with his arms on his hips watching all these guys fighting each other, and it said, only the Hellcats that are still standing will be able to take this mission. And but that was shocking, even in the early 70s, to see something like that, and the book was from the 60s. Oh, this is a nice book.
These are all Steve Savage.
What do you got there now?
Strange Adventures number 196 with, let's see. I think, what's his face? Later on became his book. Wasn't Strange Adventures, wasn't this the one Infantino sci-fi character became the...
Adam Strange?
Adam Strange, yeah. Became later Adam Strange.
Yeah, I think Adam's... I'm guessing they had more than one story, but I think Adam Strange became the title character. But I think it still had other stories in it.
So these are just like regular stories, you know, fun little sci-fi stories or whatever. One's by Jack Sparling. One's by, I think it's Lee Elias. It's Lee Elias.
The artist, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of these were written by John Broome and Gardner Fox.
And this is funny because it's a Captain Action ad.
Yeah.
I used to have the Aquaman and the Captain America. I used to put them on my G.I. Joe,
really?
And it fit. Yeah.
I had Superman. Captain Action was, it was like the G.I. Joe doll.
Yeah.
And it was a posable, you know, doll for boys. But Captain Action had a combination hat and a blue suit with a logo on the front. And he had a gun and boots. But you could get all these costumes. They had Superman, Batman, Aquaman, the Lone Ranger. The Lone Ranger was strange because he wasn't blue like he was in the cartoon and the TV show. He had a red shirt, and his mask and hat were different. But they had Tarzan. They had a bunch of different characters. It wasn't just DC characters. But then I got one, I guess it was 65 or 66, And then we moved to Steve Canyon, Sergeant
yeah,
Fury.
Yeah, Steve Canyon.
The Phantom and Flash Gordon. Although it doesn't look anything like Flash Gordon, he's wearing a spacesuit. But I got the one with Superman. What always surprised me, had a little plastic piece of kryptonite, which, you know, at 4 years old, I'm like, what is this? And then it also had the Phantom Zone projector. And I thought it was a Christmas tree base holder. You know, that's what it looked like to me. I thought, what is this thing? But then we moved to Oklahoma, and I was in a department store, and they had all the Marvel heroes, which I saw in that Marvel superhero limited action cartoon that you like so much. But they had Spider-Man and Thor, Iron Man, Captain America, and I was so fascinated because those Marvel superheroes in the 60s to me looked like counterculture. You like?
Yeah, they were.
They looked a little threatening and strange compared to the DC stuff. But what amazed me in those Captain Action Marvel stuff was in those boxes they had flicker rings of Spider-Man, Thor, and that's why I wanted them, just for the flicker rings. But anyway, yeah, they brought Captain Action back in the late 90s.
I have one of them. I got cheap, like the remake of them, but I didn't get any of the costumes. I just got the toy by itself.
Because I'd tell Holly about them, you know, and we go to Toys R Us. At one point, she showed me they had them, but they had the cat, and they had Action Boy. When I was a kid, I saw it. Oh, there's Action Boy. The Captain Action I had didn't last long. You know, I never liked to dress it, so he was walking around with no costume and all the pieces. You know, I was a little kid, you know. But so it was never. But Holly said, "Dad, they got them," but I had no use for it. I thought they were neat, you know. And also, they, besides the costume, they had a mask. Like I remember Superman, it was a mask that fit over his whole head that looked like Superman. Kind of neat, you know.
All right, what else we got here that we want to go through? Okay, here we go. Metal Men. Oh God, I love the Metal Men. This is issue 25 from 67, Ross Andrew and Mike Esposito.
Which was awesome team.
They did a ton of books with the, what's the guy's name? this guy, Kemo.
Kemo,
I remember this.
Which is one of my favorite designs. He's a chemical monster, a giant monster. But I never saw the character until Walt Simonson and Martin Pascal did the stories in the 70s. But Kemo is just a fantastic character design. And I didn't realize he'd been around so long.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 67, yeah. Oh, man, those are great books.
Who wrote The Metal Men, do you know?
Kaniger, maybe, or somebody like that? I don't know.
I keep mentioning, you know, Gardner Fox, and what was the other guy you mentioned?
There's people like Bob Haney and...
Yeah, there's Bob Haney, and what was the guy that wrote Doom Patrol?
Arnold Drake. I don't know if it was
Bob Haney and Arnold Drake were two other writers that did those kind of stories, but there was Gardner Fox and John Broome? Yeah, John Broome.
I thought John Broome was an inker. Well, he was a writer.
So I was thinking he was an inker, but that was Sid Green. Green Lantern.
Yeah,
it was John Broome.
You got me on that one.
No, I didn't get you. I'm doing the same thing you are. Those writers, they had really neat stories to me. I still read them, and kind of, even though they're simpler, they're neat. And it's, you always bring up the Showcase, and some of these DC characters are kind of out there. They were sideways characters in a way, even though they were superheroes. They were different. The Metal Men, what was it? The Green Lantern stories.
The Metal Men, the Doom Patrol, the Challengers of the Unknown, all that stuff.
Yeah, great. That was Jack Kirby. Who wrote those stories? Do you know?
Challengers?
Yeah.
Later on was Arnold Drake. The early ones? I don't remember.
But they did neat stuff, but they always had great artists. They had, you know, Ross Andrew, Mike Esposito, Gil Kane, Carmine Infantino.
Bruno Premiani, Bob Brown.
Yeah.
People, cool people like that. Well, you know what? I mean, I was just looking through these and talking about them. I start to think, and I look at these and I'm going like, when we were kids, these books were really special. You know,
yeah.
It was like, wow, look at all this cool stuff. Is this lost upon the new generation? Do you think a kid now gets a comic book and goes like, oh, wow, this is really cool? Or is it just like, okay, son, read it and enjoy it, but take care of it, and you know.
But here's something I'm going to say on this. I brought this up on the show. There's another podcast that's been around forever called Comic Geek Speak.
Right.
And they had John Workman. John Workman's an artist, but he's mostly known as a letterer. He's mostly worked with Walt Simonson. They were a great team. I absolutely love that first episode he's on. And one thing he's talking about was the whole episode. He wrote an article in, I think, the Comics Buyer's Guide. This is in the 90s. He's talking about it's the end of the comics. And a lot of people wrote in and complained. But in the 90s, that's when the whole speculator boom and, you know, comics were selling massive amounts and, you know, their resale value was through the ceiling. And then he wrote about what his thoughts were and that this was the end of it. Well, he didn't think comics were going to go away. It's just the comics as we knew them would, which some people thought that was it. One thing he brought up was a friend of his, he had a, you know, a comic store. And he said he had a silent partner that financed it. And one day that man came in with his grandson. And the guy had a old issue of Superman, I guess one from the 50s. It had three complete stories in it. And he says it was like these books we're talking about here, worse for wear. You know, you really couldn't sell it for what, you know. And so he just gave it to the kid. Oh, thanks. And, you know, they left. Well, the man brought the boy back in, and the boy was wide-eyed. And he goes, do you have any more of these? And he said, well, we do, but they're really expensive. And so he showed him a modern Superman comic. He said the kid just looked, and his eyes glazed over. He lost complete interest. Richard Starkings talked about that at once. He says, where's the sensationalism of comics anymore? And he's talking about the Bottle City, Candor, you know, all the alternate universes you go to. You know, all this stuff that comics were known for, you know, gorillas showing up with magic powers or people turning a giant monster. I mean, comics were just, as we grew up, Doom Patrol and stuff, were just fantastic. And the fantastic kind of went away. You know, now, how many times have you seen comic covers? I think it's kind of gone away now, but boardroom, they look like guys in a boardroom. They're all posed, standing on the cover.
Yeah.
And like I said, you know, again, what the listener wrote in was, they go on too long. You know, Dallas mentioned that the X-Men, he was reading the old Claremont and, you know, Cockrum X-Men. He goes, I forgot how much fun comics were before because there was so much stuff packed into one issue. And even if it continued, you were getting a lot of story. There was a lot of things. And now they take one idea and they spread it out over 6 to 12 issues, you know, which part of it, I think they're writing for an older audience.
Yeah, they're more, yeah.
But, you know, that's the thing. These other comics that we're talking about, a lot of them have three stories. That I started the episode with, that Monster Menace, was four books. I'm saying this. I've read these. Tim Buba, I've already read. I never get tired of reading that four-page story, you know. And I understand that if that's all comics were, I think I kind of want a little bit more. Watchmen, Dark Knight, all those are greatness. But you still need some of the other things. And younger audiences, there are a lot of money, and there are some books that they're putting out that kids like, you know, cartoon tie-ins, Adventure Time, that kind of stuff.
No, I can see that, but couldn't you do regular superhero books for kids?
That's what I see. Well, yeah. The other thing is, whenever they do comic books for kids, they're really toned down and talking down, kind of scene.
Yeah.
We were kids, you wanted to read Spider-Man, you wanted to find out what's happening to Spider-Man that, you know, that wasn't really written down to us.
And drawn in like more of a realistic style. Sometimes they'll draw it like in a cartoonish style. Well, since you're a kid, we're going to
draw
a cartoonish. It's like they're talking down to him a little bit.
And I'm saying this, some of the stuff, I didn't quite understand what was happening with his relationship.
It didn't
and stuff.
Matter.
It didn't matter because he was going to fight Dr. Octopus.
It didn't matter because you're looking at it and the aliens look cool. The ads are for, like, stuff that you want to buy. You know, there's all these other things in these books, you know. I mean, I don't know if books have ads in them, like, anymore, but they had there was a charm to them that now it's like, now they're probably more adult. They're probably, like, maybe they're written differently. They have an audience, but it seems like they should be targeting kids with some of these books and not talking down to them, giving them the characters, but don't make them into, like, don't turn them into, like, just do straight on one right. shot stories for right. kids. So they can pick up a book, read it. Oh, that was good. I'll get another one. Don't do these long epic, you know, like things that you got to read and you got to like, what does this mean? Or yeah. you know, this is going on too long. Just give them, you know, like Spider-Man, like Spidey Super Stories, but maybe a little bit better than that. Or well, that was pretty good, but you know.
I know what you mean, but the other issue is if they did those, where are the kids going to find them? You know,
they'd have to go to comic shops and get them.
But parents may not want to.
Yeah,
that's a pain.
That's true, you know? Too. That's true, too. But it just seems like these books were written by interesting people, but they were geared for kids.
Yeah.
They weren't geared for, like, back in the 60s, when you were, like, 14 or 15, a lot of people, even 20, weren't buying these anymore. Now, yeah. they are buying them. And because they're expensive and because they're collecting them. And
you know, that's one thing I wanted to bring up. I listened to, because of our friend Dan Pritchard, he turned me on to a podcast called Book Shambles. It's out of England. It's two comedians in England to do the show. And the reason he sent it to me is Alan Moore. He's got that book Jerusalem, which is really good, a novel. And he was on the show. Alan Moore is one of those people that I like his stories, but he's just as interesting to listen to. And I listened to it. I liked it so much that I've subscribed to the podcast. They have all these different writers from, you know, mostly England and Ireland and Scotland. They have them from, you know, even some American ones. And you know what surprises me when they talk about, and these two comedians, they read, and every episode they offer, you can, you know, write in, whoever writes the best, they win a box of books, you know. These people are voracious readers, and they're reading everything, and they talk about the books, and they have writers come on and talk about the books that inspired them, they talk about their book. But sometimes when they talk about books they read, they're comic books. I mean, and not just, you know, like upper echelon books like Miles and, you know, whatever, Harvey Pekar books and stuff like that. They're regular books, you know, comic books. And, of course, a lot of times they're reading them in trades. But I guess what surprises me is I read a lot of books. I read a lot of comic books. And I love comic books, but I never put comic books in with books I'm reading. If somebody's asking me what book I'm reading, I never say, you know, I read, you know, The Best of Metal Men, or, you know, I'm reading the newest Mobius book. To me, they're just as good to me, but I never say that. If people ask about books, I talk about novels I read. But they talk about, and it's not like, oh, I read this comic book. You know, I guess part of it is the Wortham hearings, you know. It's a stigma mm-hmm. that we have here in the United States. You always hear about French comics, that there's no stigma in France and Italy. Those books are treated as art forms. You can see what the creators have done. They've stepped it up. They say in Japan, everybody reads comic books. A guy's in the Navy with a station down in Yokosuka on the Midway. And he said one thing he liked about Japan was you see people on the subway and everybody wore a suit with a briefcase. And he says they could have been a, you know, maintenance guy, worked in the sewer or something, but when they got off work, they took off the work clothes, wore a suit with a briefcase. He says the briefcase may have had you know, some comic books in it, and that's it. But I remember he just said it like it was a way of life. Everybody read comics. But here, there is a stigma on it.
See, but you know what? I think in my mind, and I was just thinking about what you're saying, maybe it was just, maybe to me, it was better when these were just, these were for me. They're not for my parents. They're not yeah. for like older people. These are for me. Not, you know, not everybody likes these. Not everybody reads these. If you want to read them, that's cool, you know. But these are written for like kids like me that want some entertainment. And maybe and the fact that maybe, you know, some of these artists were like guys that didn't give a crap. They were just drawing them or whatever. Just made everything a little bit better. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm like completely wrong on
no,
that.
No, I don't know. I completely agree with what you're saying. But I, you know, there's certain things. My daughter would always tell me, it sounded like it was better when I was a kid. Because she always talks about.
I think it was.
Well, when she says that, what she's talking about was, she, even though it's to a lesser extent, prizes and cereal boxes.
We're cool.
That was one of my favorite things as a kid. Now, my dad would get her, you're not buying that just for the crap you get. Well, I mean, I ate the cereal.
Yeah.
But, and they still had some of that when my daughter was little, but not quite the same. But yet, they didn't have McDonald Happy Meal toys when I was a kid, and those things were awesome.
No, they didn't. No.
And my parents would talk about stuff like radio shows and stuff when they were a kid. And one thing my mom loved, my dad remembers it, but when you got, what was it, shredded wheat, it wasn't the little ones in the cereal box. It was a box that had this big biscuit. And in between each biscuit was a paper, a little rectangular paper. And you took the biscuit, you crushed it in your bowl, you know, put, you know, the milk and sugar, blueberries, whatever you want to put in it. But mom said that when she was a kid, every one of those cards had a story. And mom always talked about the shadow. She loved the shadow. And so while she's eating breakfast, she could read about the shadow. And dad always said he liked it when they had the Lone Ranger. But in between each biscuit was a story. Well, that fascinated me. We didn't have that. You know, I'd sit there and read the cereal box, which was always an ad for the toy inside or the nutrition you got out of reading it. You know, we didn't have home video. You know, every generation, my daughter grew up a Cartoon Network that had Powerpuff Girls, Dexter's Lab. I mean, to me, that was a golden age of cartoons. She grew up with Batman the Animated Series. We never had anything like that as a kid. I mean, we had other, basically any generation you grow up with, there's things that make that time special.
For them, yeah.
You know, I'm going to say this, anybody can listen to it, but when you and I grew up, I think music was the thing. Rock bands and stuff. And everybody's got their own bands they liked, but when you and I grew up, music was, it was the epitome of our culture.
Yeah, I mean, you went from buying comics to, like, being a music fan when you were a teenager or whatever.
And how many comic books have you read where you have the soundtrack of Black Sabbath or Led Zeppelin in your head,
definitely.
What you're doing in the movies, the end of Iron Man, they played Iron Man from Black Sabbath, and I thought, you all, that's what I hear every time I read Iron Man.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah, no, I think every generation has their own special art forms, and when we were kids, our special art form was the comic book. I don't think kids today, I think kids today's special art form might be the video game.
The video game is a big example.
You know, as opposed to us, you know, which was this.
Internet stuff they had.
Internet stuff, yeah.
You know, but there's other things. Graffiti is a big one. Graffiti, when I was a kid, it was just scribbles on the wall, but now you got, you know.
Now it's an art form, yeah.
So, I mean, any generation, you have several things that make that one special, and some of them were holdovers from another generation.
Kind of.
And, I mean, you can still, man, there's a lot of stuff in the world, and there's a lot of stuff to enjoy. And just because something's old, it doesn't mean you can't enjoy it. And just because something's new, it doesn't mean it's not great.
That's true, too.
So, yeah, there's so much.
State of mind.
Yeah. So, anyway, well, I'm all worked up now, and this is about the end. Listen, this has been fantastic.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Mark Chiray, for writing the kind of guide in this episode.
You can comment on this one, too. Let us know what you think, and others as well.
Yeah, and if you want to be like Mark Chiray, and why when you want to, there's a contact page. You can also join us on the Facebook group or the Facebook page if you don't want to be or you want to stay anonymous. If you could leave us an iTunes review, we'd love you even more. It helps us out, and we're only at 11 ratings, so we could use another one.
Yeah,
anyway,
please.
Thanks for listening. Remember, next Saturday is Free Comic Book Day. You can click on the link. I'll post another one on this episode. Type in your zip code, and they'll locate a store near you. And in the meantime,
read more comics.
Don't be racer, go. so you better look alive. He's busy revving up a powerful long five. And when the odds are against him in the strangest work, and you bet your life be right, so we'll see it through. Something flying as he guns the car around the track, jamming down the pedal like he's never coming back. And fence is waiting just ahead. Go, Speed Racer, go, Speed Racer, go, Speed Racer, go. Go, Speed Racer, go, Speed Racer, go, Speed Racer, go.
You can find Al's other podcast, Slow Robot A Go-Go, Dallas' webcomic, The Mighty Blue, and Al's blog, Destination Nightmare, on the sidebar of our blog at bunchofdorks.com.
And click on the Cyclops!